Now, let's review for those of you that might not have been here. First off, does anybody need a study guide handout? You don't have the one on the law of the lesson. If you don't, raise your hand and the fellows will put one in your hands. You guys, you got some back there? Don't have any? They're all out? My secretary's out of town today. You're out of luck. Sorry. Okay. Huh? Yeah. If there's somebody that doesn't have one, or yeah, maybe share. Maybe share. If you see somebody that doesn't have one, you share. If you've got two, we'll try to get some more for next week. Okay? That's the study guide on the law lesson. Just a kind of a way to keep you aware of what we're doing. We're rehearsing now these different lessons that we've learned from the seven laws of the teacher. Now, the seven laws of teaching are just a part of our curriculum for this series of lessons. We're going to get into some other things about how to influence people a little bit later. But remember, two groups that we are absolutely responsible for influencing. Name one group. The lost. We must be able to influence the lost for Christ. If we do not learn how to influence them, we will not be obedient in fulfilling the things that God has told us to do in the Great Commission. All right? Name another group that we are absolutely responsible before God for influencing. Our children and our families. Right. So we must know how to do those two things. Okay? And again, what is one of the big problems that we face among Christian people today in those two responsibilities? How do most people try to do it?
Force.
Okay. With their own natural abilities. Beg your pardon?
Flesh.
Yeah, in the flesh. Okay. Now, in other words, we just sort of do whatever comes easy or whatever comes natural. How far would you get in your business if you did it that way? How far would you get in any other area of life if you just try to do whatever you could without really learning how to do it? Isn't that right? Have you ever tried a sport and you weren't very good at it and you saw how much effort you were going to put forth, have to put forth to become good at it, and you said, forget it, it's not worth it? Huh? You know, a lot of people have done that in rearing their children and in soul winning. They've gone out door knocking for a while. They've heard from so many pastors that the Great Commission's in Revelation 3:20. You know, behold, I stand at the door and knock. Okay? And they think that's all they have to do. So they stand at the door and they knock. They've been obedient. Somebody comes to the door. They don't know what to do when the person comes. So they do whatever comes naturally. The person doesn't get saved. They come back and say, this doesn't work. I just don't have this gift. Okay? And they give it up. Now, do you have that opportunity? Can you give that up? Well, you can, but you'll be disobedient, won't you? Now, you have children. It's possible to have children biologically without having the sense to raise them, isn't it? Okay? I think that happens to everybody that ever has any of them. All right? So we have the children. We don't know how to raise them. We don't know how to influence them. We don't know how to get them from being a little totally uneducated barbarian that can't even speak our language up to the point where he is a citizen capable of taking his place in society and able to take care of himself and make a contribution to his fellow man and serve God too. How do you get him from this point to that point? Is he going to grow, more than likely, biologically, from an infant to an adult? Whether you do too much or not? Yes, he will. And because of the fact that he is going to grow up, we think, well, he'll make it okay. And we neglect that responsibility to mold him and make him into what he ought to be because it costs an awful lot of effort. It takes an awful lot of time. Now, what we're talking about here are those things that will help us to develop the skills and abilities to be able to influence those two groups of people. And in the law of the lesson, we've talked about a number of things. Wait a minute, that's the wrong thing here. Well, let me just review this just a little bit. We'll just go over it in case you didn't get any of your blanks filled in last time. Now, here's a cartoon I thought you might enjoy. I saw this in this week's paper. I made whenever I see a good cartoon, I try to make overheads out of them so I can use them in other things. I made this one for a marriage seminar. This is a Frank and Ernest seminar here. Frank and Ernest cartoon. See what she says? I'd like to live life in the fast lane, but I'm married to a speed bump. That's pretty good. So, never feel that way? Don't shake your head, men. Or ladies, you can probably get away with it. Okay. But in the law of the lesson, remember what we saw? When we come to the law of the lesson, this is the process to be mastered, the problem to be solved. And we saw that truth taught must be learned through truth that is already known. If you give somebody information that is totally unrelated to what they already know, what will happen? Yeah, they'll be confused by it. It'll go over their heads. They won't be able to understand it or appreciate it. Okay? So, it has to be related to something that they already know. In this course that we're taking this week, we're talking about missions. And we read a book this week called Communicating Christ Cross-Culturally. Fascinating book. I really was frustrated about it at first because when I started trying to read it, it was a little more technical than some of the other books that we were reading. And I wasn't able to get as much out of it in the length of time that I had to read it. And so I've had to concentrate on passing all of the words before my eyes rather than passing the ideas through my mind. Have you ever had that experience? And so I at least exposed all of the words to my eyeballs. And so, but I've got to go back and put my mind on a little of these ideas. But what it's talking about in that book is this very thing we're talking about here. Finding ways to communicate things. Let me give you an illustration from one of the things that we learned this week. It's talking about taking Bible principles and communicating the truth to another culture without changing the meaning. Now, for example, in the New Testament where it says that Christ is the chief cornerstone. Okay? Now, you're halfway up the Amazon and you're communicating to some people that live in a village along beside the Amazon. And you take your Bible and you open it up and you say that Christ is the chief cornerstone. Now, that's an illustration, isn't it? Do you think they're going to appreciate that illustration? Do they have cornerstones in their huts as a general rule? No. What then are you going to do? How are you going to illustrate it? What is a cornerstone? It's a support. Anybody here ever lay blocks? What do? The first block that you put down is called what? The cornerstone. Okay? That's called the cornerstone. Now look, when you put up a building, most people think that a cornerstone is that little thing that's stuck in the corner of a building that has somebody's name written on it that gave a lot of money to the building. That's not a cornerstone. Okay? That's another meaning of the word cornerstone. That is a cornerstone memorial. But the real cornerstone is the first block that you put down. Now, one side of that block is going to determine which way this wall goes. And the other side of the block is going to determine which way this side goes. And once you get those two sides lined up, the rest of the building is going to be based on the angle of the placement of that very first stone. Right? So when it says that Christ is the cornerstone, what does it mean? Foundation, but more than the foundation, the basis. Yeah, okay. Every direction. In other words, he establishes the direction and the placement for everything else. Isn't that right? Okay. All right, now look. Here's what it says. When it tells us in two different places. In one place it says Christ is the foundation. Another place it says he's the chief cornerstone. So he has several different ways of establishing for us what we become if we are built on him. So when we're laid on that foundation, then we also put the cornerstone down, and that establishes the direction. Okay? Now, how are you going to explain that to somebody up the Amazon? You say, well, now look, when you're laying blocks, and he says, blocks? Well, you know, when you put down the foundation of a building, he says, building? Foundation? Let's hear from some others now. Okay, I saw a hand back here. Okay, do it. He lives in a hut made out of branches and twigs and stuff. Okay. So he says you got to find out how do they build their huts, okay? Christ is like the corner pole of your hut. When you put it down, the rest of the hut is built around it. Is that a fair illustration? Now what is that inconsistency with? That's part of it, but also the law of the lesson. The law of the lesson. In other words, you're teaching him a lesson based on something he already knows. Every time that you communicate truth to somebody, you have got to relate it to something that he already understands. That's the law of the lesson. If you try to teach him something completely new, now you've had that happen to you. The law of the language and the law of the lesson are both similar in this. The law of the lesson, the law of the language says that the language used must be common both to the teacher and to the learner. Remember? So when we use words, those words have to have the same meaning to the learner as they do to the teacher. Otherwise, what's going to happen? He won't understand you. Have you ever been in a class where you were being taught, or have ever had a conversation with somebody where you were being taught, and the teacher was using words that you had never learned. And as they were teaching the material and the words both depended on each other. So when they tried to define the word, they would define the word with the lesson that you couldn't learn because you didn't know the word. Has that ever happened to you? Then you've never studied geometry. What's a cosine? How many of you ever heard the word sine and cosine? Okay, of those that have your... Put your hands back up. Come on, get them back up. You've heard the words. Of those that have heard the words, how many of you could right now give me a definition of either one? Keep your hands up. Okay, I rest my case. You see what I'm saying? I couldn't either. I could say this. What is a cosine? It's one of those things in geometry that I never learned. That's what I'd have to say, okay? You see? Now, I did okay on trig. I got trig just like that. You know why? Because by the time I got around to studying trigonometry, they let us use calculators. You know, and so all I had to learn was what sequence to push the buttons in. And so you learn it a different way. So I didn't really learn trig, did I? Now, I don't even know the difference between trigonometry and geometry. Why do they even have two different subjects, you know? They're all just hard math to me. But you see what I'm saying? You go into a place, how about this way? Here's the way children define things. You say, well, they have a word. Here's the way their definition. Give me a word you want defined. Somebody pick out a word. Circumference. A circumference is when you go around the outside. You know, they always start, it's when. You know, have you ever noticed that's the way kids define things? It's when. Why are they doing that? Because they're going to relate it to something that you do. You see? Because kids understand things that you do. Little kids are far more concrete in their reasoning than they are abstract. You understand that? You know the difference between those two? Concrete thinking means that they see things the way they are and they look at them. That's why when you use puppets, you know, remember we talked about that? When they see a little puppet and the little puppet is talking, they do not think of that as a little, you know, hunk of cloth on a guy's hand. That's a little being over here. Don't let your puppets get saved if you use puppets. Why? Yeah, they believe. Little donkey, little rabbit gets saved. You know? And if Skippy over here is getting saved, you know, what's going to happen when he finds Skippy in a box someday? You know, laying there, you know, staring up at him with his little button eyes. You see, that's going to confuse him. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We gave her one of those dolls, and my husband and I objected to sending the quote unquote verses to get.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They come with those Cabbage Patch dolls or one of those things?
Yeah, and she came to me and I said, no,
honey, only children. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That same thing happened to Becky. Somebody gave her one of these Cabbage Patch dolls. They sent the birth certificate and all this kind of stuff. And then a year later, they sent her a birthday card and all this nonsense. Now they even have camp that you can send your doll to camp. I think it's over $100. You send your doll off to camp and somebody plays with your doll all week or something like that. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's a perfect illustration. When you get involved in concrete concepts that involve abstract things, you got to be very, very careful about that. Like the guy that was laying a sidewalk, you know, and a kid ran through his sidewalk there, and he was yelling at the kid and chasing him down. And the guy said, "What's the matter? You hate kids?" He said, "No, I love them, but I love them more in the abstract, not in the concrete." Okay, so you know, remember, there's a difference between concrete and abstract thinking. Okay, we got to move on. You had a comment, somebody here? Yeah. Oh, brother. Okay. Yeah, I know it. That's it. All right. So, all teaching must begin at some point of the subject or lesson. If the subject is wholly new, then a known point must be sought by showing some likeness of the new to something known and familiar. Hey, that's what we're doing here. A minute ago, when I showed you the difficulty that people will have if you communicate to them with words for which they don't know the definitions, they won't be able to understand. We illustrated it with something that you know from your own experience. Mathematics. Okay? That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. You relate it to something that they know and understand. Okay? And then all teaching must advance in some direction. You don't just go back and give them what they already know and stay there. That may be fun, but it doesn't help. Okay? You know why you really enjoy the books that you really enjoy? Because you can relate to them. They mean something to you. They communicate with you. They start where you are. But if they're really helpful, they don't just start where you are and stay there. They start where you are and they advance you in some direction. Now, you know, I'm not real sure that we learn a whole lot of new things from books that we really enjoy, so much as we do learn how to state clearly or understand better things that we already know a little bit about. For example, if somebody gives you a book about which you know absolutely nothing and hands it to you, it's going to take a lot of work for you to master what's in there. But if somebody hands you a book that gets right down where you live and communicates with you on the level that you can understand, but it takes you a step or two further, that book will help you, won't it? On the other hand, suppose somebody gives you a book that just talks about experiences that you already know and they don't really help you because they don't move you in some direction. You lose interest in that too, don't you? So it's got to advance in some direction. Start where people are and move them forward. Now, let's apply this to soul winning. If we're going to use this principle of the law of the lesson, advancing, start where they are, advance in some direction, what are we going to have to do first in our conversation with people that we'd win to Christ in order to do this? Yes, sir. You have to find out where they are. If you're going to find out where they are, how is that going to be different than giving them your 4 points of the gospel while they stare at you? What are you going to be doing differently, Bob? Asking questions. And what else? Listening to the answer. So that you can disagree with them when they tell you how wrongly they think. So you can tell them how dumb they are for holding these ideas that they're telling you. Or what? So that you can understand where they are. If somebody comes to you and tells you these wrong things that he is now believing, he's not telling you how dumb he is and how smart you are, how wrong he is and how right you are, how much you should be thankful that you're not like him, and how you should convince him, therefore, that he should divorce himself from these crazy ideas and embrace all of your philosophies. That's not what he's doing. What he's doing is he's telling you how to help him. And if you really want to help him, you'll start from that point. I was out witnessing with a guy years ago, and the guy started saying some things like, "Yeah, I don't really believe all of that. Don't you believe that Jesus died on the cross for you?" "Well, maybe, I don't know. You know, I've heard people say that, but I don't know for sure if that really happened. You know, don't you know that Jesus loves you?" The guy was saying, this fellow I was with. "I don't know. I mean, I've never felt his love. I mean, I've never..." And the next thing I know, this guy that I'm with over here, he's a brand new Christian. He's over, "Hey, man, Jesus put those nails in his hands for you." You know, and he was just going on like that. I mean, you know, he loved you. And here you are talking, you know, and this kind of stuff. And meanwhile, the guy's sitting here thinking, this man is crazy. This guy's an insane idiot. Okay? You know what? He was right about this guy. He was. And we'll never win that guy. I don't know if anybody will ever win him or not. Here he was, chewing him out because he didn't accept and appreciate the love of the Lord. That guy didn't even know anything about it. You see? So when people give you their responses, what they're doing is they're telling you how to help them. They're telling you how to reach them, how to minister to them, how to communicate these ideas that we need to share. So we've got to take it from where they are and then advance in some direction. Learning must be perceived by graded steps. Each step must be fully mastered before the next is taken. Now that's obvious. If you don't move forward and don't master each step, well then that'll affect you in the future. You see? And you'll continue to trip. All right, the pupil who's mastered one lesson half knows the next. Therefore, the well-taught class is always eager for the next step we're reviewing right now. Knowledge is not a mass of simple independent facts. Each fact leads to and explains. So, if we're to set the learner at the task of real thinking and the solution of real problems, we must define this process of thinking. There are 3 stages. All right, remember what they are? The first is a stage of doubt or uncertainty. They don't know anything. Second, an organizing state in which the individual considers the means at his disposal to reach the ends desired. Lastly, there is a critical attitude involving selection and rejection of the schemes which have suggested themselves. So he starts out not knowing, then he collects all the information and organizes it, and then he thinks it through, rejects and accepts, and analyzes and comes up with an answer, a solution, something that he can understand, something he can really get a hold of, and that will help him. Okay? 13, this is where we were last week, and I think we spent all week on this one. In a very important sense, what we call knowledge is a record of solved problems. That principle right there, I know I've preached that principle to you dozens and dozens of times. I believe I can preach on it every Sunday and never exhaust the truth in that statement. Everything that we really know because we've worked our way through it. It is a series of solved problems. Now, most Christian people, just like most unsaved people, think that their problems are the things that keep them from succeeding. Right? But that's not really true, is it? Their problems are the things through which they succeed. If a person did not have problems to solve, he could have no success. If you didn't have problems to work out right, you wouldn't have a job. Now you think with me for a few minutes. Have you ever had a job where all the problems that the boss brought to you were a frustration to you, and you let your frustration be known? And after a while, he said, well, we'll get somebody else to solve our problems. The boss is coming to you saying, look, I got all these problems. I can't solve all of them, so you go take some of them, and you solve them, and I'll pay you to solve them. You take those problems from the boss, and you go solve them, and he'll appreciate you and value you as an employee. And he will show you how much he values you as an employee by giving you more. That's the way it works. Isn't it? So if you really want to succeed as an employee, you've got to be collecting as many problems and solving them as you possibly can. So if you do real well at solving your problems, rejoice in the Lord. You're going to get bigger ones. That is a fact of life. But if you go to your boss and you say, you know, you keep dumping these problems on me and I got more problems than I can possibly stand, because you go to work with a whole bunch of unresolved problems in your own life, now you're going to be dumping his problems back on him, and guess what? You are going to become another one of his problems. And he's going to solve that one. And how's he going to do that? Yeah, he's going to let somebody else worry about your problem. That's exactly right. Now, what is the best way to go to work in such a way that you can solve all of the problems that you need to be a valuable employee and advance and do well? Related to your own problems. That's my question. Okay? Don't take as many of your own problems as you possibly can with you to work. Sure. Solve your own problems. You say, well, I can't solve my problems. That's my problem. Well, you got a problem. Okay? You got a project, don't you? Now, most people that think they got a problem really don't have a problem except in their attitude about their real problem. You understand what I'm saying to you? The biggest problem that people have today is their attitude about their problems. Right? Let's go back to math. The reason I like to use math as an illustration is because math was always a problem for me. Okay? And I'd go to school and they'd give me a whole sheet full of problems, and they would send us home and say, I want you to work the odd problems. They're all odd to me, brother. Okay? And the even problems or something like that. They'd send you home with that. And so you go home and you work on these problems. You got all these little equations and you got to figure these things out. What are they doing? Why are they giving you those problems? Make you think and help you learn certain equations. Because what is an equation? A way to solve a certain kind of problem. Whenever you're faced with a certain kind of problem, then you can apply that equation and you'll find the solution. Now, if they would write the problem down on the paper, I could usually solve the problem once I learned the equation. Then they had this other little thing that they tormented us with called the word problem. Remember that one? Now I got to translate this thing. I got a word problem over here, and it's not set up in this little thing where everything's on the right line. See, they did this to us on the exam the other day. He said, you got 30 pages of notes. I said, we're supposed to memorize all this stuff? No, don't memorize all this stuff. I shouldn't have listened to that. I should have memorized all this stuff. I'm telling you, I should have memorized that stuff. See, because if you give me the problem, I can get the solution. But when they give you this test where it says, okay, figure out your own problems and then solve them, I got a big problem now. See, because I didn't bring all the raw material with me. Okay? I got the equations, I just can't memorize the problems. You understand that? Okay? Now, the biggest problem that I had at math was figuring out what the problem was. You got that? You know what the biggest problem is most Christian people have in life? Figure out what the problem is. You know what a counselor will do for you? He will help you to translate your word problem into a math problem and remind you of the equations that you already know. That's what a good counselor does. Now, a bad counselor, you bring your problem to you, and he sits there with a paper, and he comes up with it and says, here's the answer. Oh, thanks. Now, what do you do if you treat other people's problems that way? What are you teaching? If you got a problem, do what with it? Bring it to me. I'll solve it for you. Hey, that's why some of you right here are running ragged. You've taught your kids. If you got a problem, bring it to me. I'll solve it for you. And they're going to do that. That's right. And they'll wreck your car someday, and they'll bring that to you. You see? And then they're going to get out in society, and instead of being able to bring the problem to mom and dad, they're going to take the problem to the boss or to the sheriff or something like this. Let me tell you something that happened yesterday, a perfect illustration of what I'm talking about. The Shriners Parade, you know, was in town yesterday, and they needed as many officers out on the street as they could get because they had everybody in the world in the streets yesterday. And so I went and worked with the police yesterday. And then, did you recognize me yesterday? I didn't think you did. I was standing there directing traffic down by the hospital, and I saw Ted Harris coming. And so I motioned him, and I just went like this, and I waved at him like that, and he just, you know, and he just went right off. I mean, he wouldn't know who I was. Yeah, sure. So he wouldn't have recognized it. But, you know, y'all look the same. That's why they called it a uniform. But at any rate, yeah, the glasses and the whole bit, you know. But at any rate, I was, yesterday afternoon, I went out and worked with one of the officers, Roscoe Kyle's, a good fella. And you know, we had the typical stuff. We went down here to a domestic thing, and down in a section near St. Francis Hospital. And here was an old gentleman in a wheelchair, and his son in his early 20s, and a little ramshackle house. And the police go out there all the time. And what happens is they'll have a big fight, and the dad will get to where he can't get the boy to cooperate, and he'll say, all right, out, get your stuff, get out. And the mom will say, no, let's let him stay, you know. And then they'll call the police, and the police will come and just tell them, okay, now everybody behave, get your problem worked out, and then they'll leave. That's what happens, you know, about once a week. So we were standing there, and that happens in certain houses, you know. As I'd drive to some of the officers, they'll point them out to me. You know, now you'll get a call here. Yeah, the mom and dad live over here and the sons live over here. The other day they were shooting at each other, you know, and this stuff like that. They weren't really shooting at each other. They were threatening to shoot at each other. But, you know, this is the kind of stuff that people have to deal with. In other words, if you use a hammer to solve those kinds of problems, you have to keep going until you get a bigger hammer. And, of course, the ultimate hammer that society has to offer today is lock them up in prison. It used to be capital punishment. And in some places it still is. But even still, there's a big debate about that in our society. So you just keep getting a bigger hammer and a bigger hammer and a bigger hammer until finally you call the law and the law brings their hammer. Isn't that right? Well, let me give you another illustration of it. After we finished that call, we got a call that there was a fellow refusing to leave the Salvation Army. What had happened? He'd been living there for about a month. And he went out and got drunk the night before, which is against the rules, and so they told him he had to leave. So pack up all your stuff and leave. Now, this guy has got a suitcase. He's got all kinds of shirts on hangers and pants on hangers. He's got two great big boxes with all of his stereo stuff in it. And he's got all this stuff out on the curb, and he won't leave. And so we go, and the officer I was with basically told him, asked the fellow, do you want him to leave? Yes, he wants him to leave. Okay, he told the fellow, okay, I'm telling you to leave. If you don't leave right now, I'm going to take you to jail. And after you leave, if you come back here for 6 months, I'm going to arrest you for trespassing after notice. You understand that? Yes, I understand that. Okay, are you going to leave? Yes, I'm going to leave. All right, get in the car. And we'll take you to City Line. Well, the City Line wasn't but a block away. So he brought him up here to Pole Mill to a friend of his. All of his stuff loaded in the back seat, stuff on his lap. He couldn't even get in. And we brought him up here, and the guy in Pole Mill didn't want him. Okay? He says, sorry, I haven't got room for you. So we're going to take you now. He said, well, take me out to Berea. So we can't go to Berea. That's in the county. Well, take me out to Taylor's. That's in the county, too. Oh, I don't know what to do. The officer says, well, I know what to do. Okay, so we took him down to the law enforcement center. And we unpacked him and got all of his stuff out here on the sidewalk. He said, now, you got anybody you can call? So we took him inside. So I'm sitting there counseling with him a little bit. And I said, where do your folks live? They live in Taylor's. You got a dad? Yeah. Why don't you call your dad? Well, dad doesn't want to help me. I said, why not? Well, I don't know. You know, dad and I just don't get along. I said, your dad has some rules at his house? Well, yeah. You keep those rules? No. I said, you know, you ought to be able to put that together, don't you think? You know? And you know, I think he got the message. And I said, you know, you go and you keep the rules, and maybe, you know, Dad lets you stay there and get your life straightened out. Get this drinking. Oh, yeah, I don't really have a drinking problem. I said, your biggest problem is you don't know you got a drinking problem. I've never met a guy yet that won't, that'll get victory over drink until he admits he's got a drinking problem. Well, you know, I don't drink. I haven't drunk for months until last night. I said, man, you're not even sober now. You know, and so we just, you know, kind of preached at him a little bit. So we went in there and I heard him call. I stood there by him with the phone, make sure he didn't make any long distance calls. And he made call after call after call. And he'd start out, hey, yeah, how you doing? Yeah, good to talk to you. You know, and he was trying to reestablish the relationship. Sort of like the guy, you know, that called up, hey, George, yeah, it's your brother Joe. Yeah, oh, yeah, it's been a long time. About 30 years, I guess. Yeah, that's right. Well, how you doing, George? Yeah. Hey, listen, George, you still got both your kidneys? You know, I mean, that's the way some people are. You know, they have no relationship at all until they got a need. Isn't that right? And then they start trying to rebuild his relationship. Okay, so this is what this guy was trying to do. And finally, he got somebody to agree to come and pick him up and take him someplace else. That was tragic. But you know what that guy's biggest problem is? He doesn't know he got a problem. That's right. He doesn't want to admit he's got a problem. So I stood there and just kind of preached at him for a little while he was waiting for his ride. And I told him, I said, you know, Jeff, your biggest problem here, buddy, is you don't know you've got a problem. I said, you're your own worst enemy. You're killing yourself. You're ruining your life, waiting for other people to bail you out all the time. Well, they did me wrong down there. They did me wrong. No, they didn't do you wrong. They got a rule. You get drunk, you don't get to stay. You broke the rule. You did this to yourself. No, well, you know, they did me wrong. You know, they said 10. It was only 11. I said, hey, it wasn't 10. That's the rule. And here he is blaming everybody else in the world for his problem. And that's why he's where he is. You see? I don't mean to be unkind. I love you. That's why some of you are where you are. You're looking for somebody else to solve your problem. It's not going to happen. It's your problem. You brought it on yourself. You got to fix it. Here's the way Dr. Bob Sr. said. No doubt the problem is with you. Okay? Somebody come in and be griping about a thing, and he'd say, no doubt the problem is with you. Anybody that comes in for counseling to tell me about somebody else that's driving them nuts, I never talk to them about the other person. Why? Why can't I do that? Yeah, he's not there. Okay? The doctor can't treat the guy that didn't come. Okay? You got to treat the guy that's in your office. You help him. Now, the other guy might be driving him nuts, but this is the guy that came for help. And the only thing that you can do is help the guy that came for help learn how to deal with that other guy. If the other guy ever comes in, you might be able to help him. Now, I said that in a nice way. And all of us probably know that the guy that didn't come for help can't be helped anyway, even if he did come at this point, because this is the guy who has to have some help. It's not just that he didn't come, it's that this guy really has a problem, you see? Okay, so knowledge is really a record of solved problems. Let's take a look at number 14 now. We're looking at some rules. All right, here's some rules. Now, don't try to memorize these rules and go home and suck your thumb because it doesn't work. You got to understand these things. Everybody goes off to a seminar and says, oh, if I can just get this material. Oh, you know, I go to these seminars. Could I have a copy? And they take it home, they put it on a pile with the rest of the stuff. Isn't that right? I got to get this booklet. You know, I got to get this stuff. I got to fill these things out. I go to these Gothard seminars and all these guys are just writing this stuff down. Isn't that right? Or if it's not a pastor seminar where the wives are present, then the wives are writing it down. So the husband will have it in case he ever thinks of it when he needs it. And he takes it home and he puts it in a drawer someplace and he can't remember where it is. Isn't that right? But that way he feels secure because he's got it if he should ever need it. You fellas ever go to the hardware store and buy a whole pack of screws because you needed one and you knew you had some but you didn't know where it was? And you added that to the stock of ones that you bought just like that? Okay? You got drawers full of this stuff. And every now and then you go in there and you'll be looking for something else. And there that thing is. Yeah, boy, I bought another pack of those things. You know? You ever do that? Sure. So the key is not in getting this material. It's in thinking about what we're saying. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Many people don't want to read the Bible, but they want to find
it. What Don is saying is the ultimate application of what we're talking about. That same attitude is the way a lot of people treat their Bible. They think they're okay as long as they've got one. Got the right one. Right? Listen, I know guys that'll fight you over which Bible you ought to own that live like they don't read it. You hear what I said? Something bad wrong there. Something bad wrong when a guy will go to Fifth City with you over a translation that he doesn't read. Isn't that right? Something awful contradictory there. Okay. So, this law of knowledge thus explained, affords to the thoughtful teacher rules of the highest practical value. So what are you going to do with these rules? Yeah. You going to memorize them and take them home and put them with the other rules? No. What are you going to do? What are you going to do with them?
Think about them.
That's the word I'm looking for. When are you going to think about them? Yeah. Starting when? Right now, while I read them to you. I want you to think about them. You got it. Okay. All right. Let's do that. All right. Number one, find out what your pupils know of the subject you wish to teach to them. This is your starting point. Okay? Where do you have to start in witnessing to the average American in a post-Christian society today? What truth do you have to start with? God is. What is that? That's a worldview. Okay? We learned this week. Man, that was good. That was one of the most valuable things we learned. You've got to start teaching people basic worldviews. Before we finish this series, I'm going to work in some things about that. About the dualism of Buddhism and the monism of monism, or whatever you call it, of Hinduism. I was moaning before the week was over. But, okay, you got that. And then for example, the monotheism of Islam and other religions like that. In other words, there's one God, and how is he related to it? The Japanese, is that the one that was dualistic? They believe that the supernatural and the natural are both intertwined. We believe that the supernatural is over the physical. Do you know what the Hindu believes? He believes the natural is over the supernatural. That's the way he looks at it. You've got to witness to a God differently like that. You know what has been influencing American thought for the last 20 years? Eastern thought. And it's necessary to understand a few of those things. You know, it used to be that you could go up and witness to the average guy, and his mom had taken him to Sunday school when he was a little kid, and he'd been to Bible school a few times, and you could go up to him and say, you know you ought to get saved, don't you? You know you ought to trust Jesus, don't you? And you know, you don't know it. You know, you just had to kind of twist on him a little bit there, and then he'd get saved. And doesn't work that way now. You know you ought to trust Jesus. Well, who's Jesus? You ought to get born again. Born again? You mean like Dan Rather talks about? No. People don't have any basic idea. You got to have a starting point. And the average person in America today is at a different starting point than most of us assume. Some of us were. You got to find out where he is and be able to meet him at that starting point. So communicate with him. Communicate with him and find out where he is. That's your starting point. Number two, make the most of the pupil's knowledge and experience. How do you know what that is? Ask him. Get to know him. Talk to him. Find out some things about him. When I was riding with this officer yesterday, I said, how long have you been on the force? 20 years. 20 years. Yeah. You guys my age are just a little bit older. You from around here? No, I'm from Florida. He said, St. Augustine, Florida. So we talked Florida a little bit. Yesterday was good South Florida weather. And so we talked about that a little bit. And got a family? Yeah, he said, I got a little boy. A little boy. Yeah, 16 months. Now, wait a minute. Hold it. Guy my age. Got a 16-month-old baby. What's he telling me? Okay, maybe a second marriage, but it isn't. What he's telling me, he and his wife were married for a long, long time and never had any kids. And then the Lord gave him one. And he gave glory to the Lord. And then I noticed there he had a copy of the 23rd Psalm on a little card laying in the seat. Now, what do you know about people who like to carry the 23rd Psalm and say the Lord's Prayer and things like that? They're religious. But, you know, people who pray the Lord's Prayer and like to read the 23rd Psalm and things like that might not necessarily know the gospel. But I know a little bit about this fella. Know a little bit about him. And I also realized that I was making some false assumptions about him, because the first thing he told me when he told me he had a little child was that he'd probably been married before. But that wasn't the case. And so I started analyzing, putting this thing together, trying to find out where he was. Now, it took me all day to pick up this information. I didn't give the gospel to the guy. But you know what happened when I left? We went back in, and we told the sergeant, I said, you need anything else before I go? And he said, no. He said, I appreciate it. He said, how'd you do? And he talked to the guy. He says, I did real good with the chaplain. He said, only cussed twice. Now, hey, you know what he was saying? You know what he was telling me? That's right. He was kind of apologizing to me, but saying, you know, I really appreciate you not jumping on me. And then he shook my hand. He said, Chaplain, anytime you want to ride with me, you just give me a call. See what I'm saying? I know who he is. I know a few things about him. I got another opportunity. Now, I don't know about you, but I would consider that a successful day. Okay? Oh, but what if he dies today? So because I think he's going to die today, I'm going to drive him away yesterday. You see what I'm saying? That's the way a lot of people do it. Be careful. All right, we got a lot of input here. I saw a hand back here somewhere. No? Okay. Here and then here. Yes. Nobody can hear you. Sorry.
I think the big thing is we have to be close enough to the Lord to know when the Spirit is giving us what to say.
Yeah, good point.
That's the biggest problem.
You got to walk in the Spirit. That is true. You really do. You got to walk in the Spirit. Otherwise, you're going to be, like our brother said a minute ago, you'll be controlled with the flesh. Okay? Yes. That's right. In other words, see, I already knew he was religious, and that's another reason he said that. You know, I represent religion to him, and so he felt a little bad, you know, about those things, and so he was trying to kind of straighten his religious status out there a little bit, you know, before he stopped for the day. So I understand where he was coming from, and guess what? I like the guy. You know, I got to know him. I made a good friend. And another thing he said to me, after he told me that you could ride me, he says, it's good to get to know you. Well, that was a blessing. And I said, you too. Appreciate it. Now, I'll see him somewhere. He showed me a picture of his little boy. And I'll see him someplace. Maybe I'll run into him at the mall sometime. And I'll see his little boy and hug on him a little bit and start to make a friend. You see? Maybe win that fella. Okay? That's right. In other words, now yesterday he did share with me a couple of things that, you know, he could be on thin ice sharing those things. You know, if I went and ratted on him, you know, now I've got to hold confidence on those things in order for him to retain what we started yesterday. Okay? I wish I had mentioned his name earlier because I've given you too much information about him now. But that's okay. All right. Make the most of the pupils' knowledge and experience. C, encourage your pupils or anybody you're teaching or influencing to clear up and freshen their knowledge by a clear statement. Let's go back. We used an illustration of how to do that a minute ago from math. Remember? They give you word problems. Why are math teachers giving us word problems? Yeah. Think it through. In other words, if you can take it from a sentence, you know, a train leaves a certain town at such and such a time. You know, another train leaves in the opposite direction, blah, blah, blah. And this is traveling at that speed and that is traveling at this speed. At what point will they pass? And my response was always,
I don't care.
Who cares? That's right. Okay, who cares? Okay. But at any rate, that's probably your response too. But at any rate, it's like the two Polacks were trying to figure out how tall the flagpole was, you know. And they were trying to figure out the math, and they said, well, how tall is the flagpole? One guy kept trying to climb it. He kept sliding back down. So another guy comes along. What are you trying to do? Trying to figure out how tall the flagpole is. And he says, well, you know, just unbolt it and lay it down and measure it. Oh, good idea. So they unbolted it, laid down and measured it. You know, it's 36 feet. They put it back up, and the guy said, boy, that guy's really dumb. He said, yeah, I know. He said, we don't want to know how long it is. We want to know how tall it is. So, you know, some people just don't get it. You know, they never get it, you know. It's like the two guys in the elevator, you know, he was trying to be real discreet, you know. And some people never get what you're trying to tell them. And so the guy says, you know, somebody, the odor didn't work. And the other guy says, well, it can't be me because I don't use it. You know, but they just don't get it. You know, they just never get it. But that's the way some folks are. But at any rate, word problems. They give you a word problem. Now, in order for you to put it down, this on this line, and know whether to put a little X or the little dividing thing, to put all that together, you have to be able to do what? Think and... I'm looking for a word here. Reason, yeah, okay.
Apply
or organize, use. What will you have about that problem by the time you get it on paper to apply the equation? Understanding. That's the word I'm looking for. You will understand if you get it down right. You'll understand what the word problem says. What is that? It is a clear statement of the problem. Once you get a clear statement of your problem, you're on the road to getting it solved. You ever heard that? Somebody says, well, you know, and I don't know where they get these percentages, you know. I don't know who ever figured that out. Well, you know, stating the problem is 90% of the solution. You know, I never did understand percentages either. But that is an important part of the problem, isn't it? Stating it clearly. This is my problem. I think that's probably what medical doctors do, isn't it? They identify the symptoms. Now, when a person generally feels bad, he'll probably come in, and Dr. Harris can either correct or amplify what I'm saying here. When he comes in, he's got certain significant symptoms, and he's probably got a whole lot of insignificant symptoms that maybe he kind of added to his other real ones. You know? It's like the doctor came in, and he was filling out the thing for the lady, and everything he would ask her, you know, you having this symptom? Yes. You having this symptom? Yes. You having this symptom? Yes. Is this problem? Yes. And finally, he looked at her, and he says, do your teeth itch? Yes. So then, you know, what do you got? I got a hypochondriac here. But you know, what the doctor is doing is he's discovering those symptoms which are significant so that he can determine what the problem really is. Okay? Is that a fair statement of it? That's what diagnosis is. Now, there are some things that really are irrelevant. And that's what a counselor does. When somebody comes to me as a counselor with a problem, a lot of times they're bringing in all this unrelated baggage. Okay? And they're trying to relate all these other things that are going on to a real problem. And you know, it's one of those things that, look, while I'm here, would you make me feel better in these 35 areas too? No, you got to do that on your own. I'll help you find out where the log jam is, okay? The choked channel. I read a true story one time about a city that was a boom town. And they'd gone up and they dammed up a little creek there and built a reservoir, and the town boomed, and then the water dried up. And they did everything they could think of to try to find more water. And they couldn't, and eventually the town dwindled down, became a dust town, or whatever you call it, a ghost town, and became a ghost town and just died. And years later, an old prospector was camping up near that old dried out reservoir there where the creek to see where why the reservoir was dried up, and he found that there was a clogged up pipe, and that some rocks and stuff had been built up in there, and that the water had gone through an underground channel, and he dug that stuff out of there, and the water immediately began to flow. Now here were tens of thousands of gallons of water that were available to that town, but because one little channel was unchoked, or was choked, they weren't able to get their water. Same thing's true in our lives. A little choke channel. You know what the problem is with a lot of people? They don't learn the lesson that a key doesn't have to be as big as a door. They think the solution has to be as big as the problem. They think that the experience of opening a door has to be as big as the door itself. Not so. There's a lot of people who don't get saved for that reason. They are looking for a feeling that is equal to the other feelings that they've had. You see? A little key will open a big door. A little key will drive a big car. You see? Because there are other sources of power available that the key makes available. One little principle will change a whole life if you get a hold of it. Why? Because once you get it going, then everything else starts working together. You see? The clear statement of a problem is the key to the problem. If you can't say what you mean, you can't mean what you say. If you can't state what you're trying to solve, you can't solve it. Say it clearly. Articulate the problem. Phrase it out. Write it down. I used to do that. You know, I had a whole lot more counseling in the early days than I do now. I think there are a couple of reasons for that. One is I think I'm helping people more from my preaching than I was before, and it might have been that I was actually causing problems in my preaching and I was having to straighten out in my counseling. I don't know. But, you know, I think there's sometimes a way that a preacher can cause himself problems in counseling. Come to me, I'll solve it for you. Maybe that's some of it. But I tried a little idea that I picked up from a pastor where I had him fill out a little 3x5 card where they put their name and their address and it says, state clearly the nature of your need. And one guy put pastoral counseling on the card. I thought, where do we start? Well, okay. A clear statement. D. Begin with facts or ideas that lie near your pupils that can be reached by a single step from what is already familiar. There's the key. Single step. Begin with facts or ideas that lie near your pupils that can be reached by a single step that is already familiar. Look, one of the reasons that we don't make progress in our influence of our children or our influence of the lost is we want to make the trip in one big step. Remember what I talked about on Wednesday night? Lazy man's load. What's a lazy man's load? That's where you try to carry everything at once. Why do you do that? Don't want to have to come back. So you put all of the dirt in the wheelbarrow the first time, and you get to pick it up again on the way. Because it all falls out, or half of it falls out, or you dump it over. Isn't that right? A little bit does a little bit of good. A whole lot ought to do a whole lot of good, right? So go out and put 500 pounds of fertilizer on your grass and see what happens. You see? Well, if a little bit does a little bit of good. Huh? No. Balance the right amount. So, one little step. That's the way you do it. Relate every lesson as much as possible to former lessons. Now, I know it's possible to overdo this. I'm sure that I overdo that here in this class. But look, you bring it on yourselves, okay? When I ask you questions about what we studied last week and you don't answer me, that's one of the reasons I do that, okay? So if you got it, you tell me you got it and we'll move on. But if you don't get it, let's keep going back because you're not going to know where we are 3 weeks from now if we don't build on the foundation and solidify it. Yes, ma'am? That's right. You're going to have to help them understand even the nature of the universe. That's right. Dr. Noose was telling us about the other day. He was asking this little boy. They've been using the wordless book with him, you know. And he said, I want to get saved. Okay, what is salvation? What, describe salvation. Well, it's red and green. And, you know, and he just, you know, he didn't understand the concept. He was thinking concretely. So he wasn't ready. You see? Have you ever talked to a little boy and you explain all this to him and then you say, now, are you a sinner? No. What does that mean to him? What's his experience say? If you do wrong, what happens? You get spanked. That's right. He's not able to get beyond the immediate consequences to the ultimate consequences. There you go. They don't believe the Bible's the Word of God. I think one of the key things that you have to use with rational people today is you have to give them some reason to believe the Bible. Now, you can't prove the Bible to a person. It has to be accepted by faith. But you can give them some rational explanations. I start there a lot of times with people that I'm witnessing to, businessmen and others like that. Look, if there is a God, and I believe there is, then all we can know about that God is what He chooses to tell us. Is that fair? Well, maybe. All right. Now, how has God communicated with us? Two ways that you can always use to witness to people. Two ways God's communicated. Two ways He's gotten His message to us. What are they? Creation. What He has made says something about Him. All right? He says, well, I don't believe in creation. I believe in evolution. Well, stop right there, friend. Stop right there and spend a little time helping this person to see the logical alternatives to evolution and the illogical applications of it. See, start missing creation and evolution, people will leave. They walk out on you. Okay? That's the choir. I tease them about that every week. That's the choir. They got to go get ready here. Okay? So you got to start talking about some of those things. Okay? Now, let's say you get past that. And it may take you 6 months to get this person to realize, you know, God probably did put us here. He probably did make this. Now, if you can get him to acknowledge, God put me here, it's a very logical next step for him to think, if he put me here, I might be responsible to him. When it finally dawned on me at the age of 25, after a month of being witnessed to, when it dawned on me, you know, there is a God. And God made me. Nobody had to tell me but the Holy Spirit. If there's a God, and if He made me, I am in big trouble. Okay? I'm in big trouble. Because I got some obligations to Him, and I'm not meeting those obligations. What must I do to be saved? That was the condition I was in when I came to Christ. And I think the reason I came there is because God didn't try to give me the Roman road the first day He met me. He brought my thinking to the place where I knew there's a God and I owe Him something. And I better find out how to meet that obligation. Now, it took me another month to realize what salvation was and to receive Christ. But I started trying to clean up my act the moment I acknowledged the existence of God. I started searching seriously for the truth. You see what I'm saying? So that's what we got to do. We got to relate every lesson to a former lesson. And F says, arrange your presentation so that each step leads easily. Find illustrations in the commonest and most familiar objects suitable for the purpose. Who was the best example of that teaching that you can think of? Jesus Christ. Seed, plants, fish, water, bread. Isn't that right? He put it right where people can get a hold of it. I'm the good shepherd. They said, if thou be the Christ, tell us plainly. He's just given them the story of the good shepherd. If you're really the Christ, tell us plainly. They weren't looking for a true expression that they could believe. They were looking for legal evidence with which they could convict. And they didn't get it, so finally they made it up and crucified him anyway. Isn't that right? Some people you're never going to convince. But people who really want to know the truth will know it. And what did he say to those guys who challenged him? John 10. Hey, if you don't believe me, and if you don't believe my Father, believe the works that I do. Two chapters before, he healed a blind man. Okay? One thing I know, whereas I was blind, now I can see. He used that sight. If you would say we are blind, you would see. But now you say we see, therefore your sin remaineth. You're not willing to admit you're blind. That's why you're going to stay blind. You don't acknowledge your problem of sin. I came not to heal the righteous, or not to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. How do you illustrate that? Those that are well need not a physician, but they that are sick. Simple, everyday illustrations. Am I right? The Lord Jesus did this constantly in His teaching, and that's what we need to do. Now, you can't do that unless you are thinking through the experiences of life yourself and seeing lessons in them. All right? Leading people themselves to find illustrations from their own experience. How do we do that? How can we do that? Has anybody in here ever done that? Okay, all right. So, in other words, Rose has had a marriage that has failed, and now she is using that to communicate with others. That same idea of seeking the Lord to be content with where they are right now. That's a good testament from your own experience. Who else? Is there an illustration that you use from your own life? Okay. Being able to use your own experience and your own... Whenever you're trying to get somebody to understand something, try to get them to find an illustration from their own life. Now, not using one from your own life. We've had two illustrations of that, and that's good. And that helps them to relate your experiences to theirs. But what you need to do is to help the person you're teaching get an illustration from his life. Anybody think of an illustration of that? Yes, sir. Right. Okay. All right, now that's good. Every one of these illustrations y'all are giving me are outstanding. There's a little step further we need to go here. Dr. Harris? Okay, all right, right. In other words, he helped her to think about, as Bernie is saying, her own need, and she then understood that need that she's talking about, like with the woman at the well, and then she understood what he was talking about. He helped her to see an illustration from her own life. Now, have you ever been teaching somebody and they say, oh, you mean like, and then they give you an illustration and you know they got it. You see? That's what this is talking about. That's what I'm doing right now. You see that? I'm trying to get you to do what? Huh? Think of an example from your own life. That's right, okay? I'm trying to get you to do that very line right there. Okay, we got to quit. I didn't realize it was that late. All right, I guess when the choir gets up and walks out, I ought to think of that, shouldn't I? Okay, all right, we'll finish that up next week. And then come back to these things. Let's stand and be dismissed in prayer, okay? Ask Pastor Paul Martin, if he would, to dismiss us in prayer.